new CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Attacking Third, a CBS Sports Soccer podcast. I'm Sandra Herrera, CBS Sports lead NWSL and U.S. Women's National Team writer, joined today by my colleague and co-host Lisa Roman. And we're also joined once again by Lori Lindsay, currently NWSL analyst for CBS Sports. She made 31 appearances as a midfielder for the United States Women's National Team from 2005 to 2013, and she helped the team to a 2012 London Olympics gold and earned a silver medal in the 2011 FIFA Women's World Cup. And she's back to help us recap this bronze medal match. Lisa, Lori, how are we doing today?
I think we're doing okay. I mean, we got a medal, so I'm happy with that, but there's so much to break down in this game and so much to talk about. And thank goodness we have Lori here with us to to give us all the dirty details from being a player at this level.
How you feeling, Lori?
Yeah, well, I'm feeling great. I'm extremely happy for the team. And then also, like, let's continue this on, because we were talking behind the scenes. Listen, the gold medal match just got postponed even longer. So
yeah, we're here for everybody. It's another Olympic-sized episode for everyone. Just a reminder, we're going to be recapping this bronze medal victory for the United States. We're going to get into the match. What does it all mean? Thank you all for joining us. If you have enjoyed our context during the Olympics over the course of these last few weeks, just a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at Attacking Third. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, everywhere you can listen to your shows. And let's get into it. We did a pretty good job in the last episode. We set the table, right? Mm-hmm. We were talking about all sorts of things leading into this bronze medal match. We talked about how the United States got to this point. We touched a bit on Australia and how they got to this point. We took a deeper dive once again into that sort of 0-0 draw that they had to close out that final group play. And we had a lot of questions of how this match was going to look or possibly feel for both of these teams on each side of the ball. And in true bronze medal fashion, I think we got a little bit of a, hey, screw it, it's the final match, and let's bring it all in. We also talked a lot about maybe some of the missing parts that were going to come into play for both of these sides, for United States and missing somebody like Alyssa Nair, for Australia missing somebody like Ellie Carpenter. We were curious how this final starting 11 was going to look for the United States. So let me give us the rundown of who got tagged with the start, and then you both can hit me with your thoughts, feelings, and opinions on those. For the United States, they round out as follows. They had Adriana France starting as goalkeeper. They had Kelly O'Hara, Becky Sauer, Tierna Davidson, and Crystal Dunn to round out the back line. In the midfield, they rolled with Julie Ertz, Sam Mewis, Lindsay Horan, and to close out the front line, they had Kristen Press, Carly Lloyd, and Megan Rapinoe. Lori, I'm going to go to you first on this one, okay? For this starting 11, can you walk me through maybe what you were thinking the team needed to look like going into this match? And then what were your reactions when you saw this starting 11, particularly that attacking line?
Yeah. Well, we even talked about this the last episode, too. And this is not, I don't think, the front line that we expected, for sure. I don't think we thought Carly or Megan Rapinoe would get the nod. But seeing Kristen Press in there was I think what was expected as well. But, you know, and a big shout out to Tierna Davidson coming in the matches that she played, and then getting the start in this bronze medal is massive, I think, for her development and going forward, because she's going to be an integral part of that back line, at least I suspect, in the future. But, you know, I think we needed exactly what we saw to start this game. Some excitement, some fresh legs, some two players in particular with Carly Lloyd and Meg Rapinoe. Even though I was thrilled to see them in the starting lineup, I didn't think I would expect that, just the way the rotation had gone and you know, how I thought Flacco was going to line this team up. But those are two players that have been clutch throughout their entire careers to score big goals. And they, you know, they delivered, quite frankly. And then the midfield, listen, still not, I don't think, what we expected. Those are three with Ertz, Sam Uys, and Lindsey Horan, three that we had seen in there quite often. But in terms of like what I wanted to see more, which is a bit more of keeping the rhythm and dictating the tempo, we still didn't see it. But enough pressing, enough of the job getting done to solidify the bronze, really, to sum it up.
Lisa, in terms of like this starting 11, I want you to hit me with like maybe some defensive thoughts, right? With your experience sort of locking things down in the back, what were you looking for from the back line in this match? And like, were you satisfied in sort of seeing this back four in front of French when you saw the 11 drop?
Yes. I mean, we've talked about it, Sandra and I, throughout this Olympics, of the back line for Vlaco in the United States. And he's made changes and he's rotated players in. But each time I come back to Tierna Davidson, she needs to be back there. Her partnership with Becky Sauerbrunn is really good. They have a good relationship that really balances each other out. And Dunn and O'Hara on the flanks, out wide in the back, they've been consistent throughout this tournament. O'Hara she's let me down at some points, I'm not going to lie. And I think that Australia did put a lot of pressure on her throughout this game, in this bronze medal match. But overall, I think it was a good matchup. And I know that Tierna Davidson has had a lot of fingers pointed at her based on how that Canada game went down and the penalty kick that was called on her. But she's the youngest player on this team on the field for the United States at 22, which isn't even all that young. And as Lori said, she is the potential future of this back line. And I believe she will be the future of this back line. So to get her all of this experience in this Olympic tournament alongside a player like Becky Sauerbrunn, who has a tremendous career at the international level and has so much leadership and can truly pass that along to her partner in that center back position, is huge. And then of course, Julie Ertz sitting in front, what, she didn't play 30 minutes of this entire Olympics or 45 minutes of this entire Olympics. And she proved why. The United States needs her on the field throughout this run and throughout this stretch. She locks it down defensively and she just finds those pockets to pick it off. But Lori, you're right. The cohesion in the midfield really wasn't there. We were waiting for it to come throughout this entire Olympics, and even today we saw small lights of connection and cohesion and rhythm to connect in that midfield, but it wasn't a full game of it. But overall, a better effort. They got a win. They got a big win. 4 goals in the back of the net. So hey, that's good enough, right? It's good enough for the bronze.
I mean, you know, we're gonna express some joy here on this episode. I'm not going to act like we're not. We're going to express joy in the fact that this was a bronze medal victory for the team. But I think, you know, in the spirit of how we've been covering these Olympics, there's going to be room for us to talk about that kind of stuff. And in this first half, things got off to a very, very quick start for this team. We're talking about a breakthrough opening goal in the opening 8 minutes, and it comes by way of Megan Rapinoe in like one of the most elite fashion like type of goal that you can get. She's runs over to the corner on a set piece and provides what's supposed to be service and ends up getting an Olympico in the Olympics. And
of this course. Ball,
yeah, this ball just bends into net and they're off and running. And even prior the lead up to that goal, quite frankly, it just, the team just looked a little bit different, or maybe a little bit more familiar, depending on what type of eye you're watching this team with. Because I think, again, we've been talking about it all Olympics, that sort of very familiar high press, intense attacking style type of team, that sort of element has kind of gone missing a little bit throughout this Olympic Games. when you guys watch Deco Lori, when you're looking at a goal like that, mm-hmm. that early in the game, what does that do for your team in a medal game?
Well, I think in general, it is like, you're like, hell yes, it alleviates yeah. some pressure, right? You get momentum, especially because I think, you know, we haven't talked a lot about, or you two potentially have, but I think the U.S. thrives on goals. They thrive on what you just said, Sandra, like high pressing energy, right? You get that from fans. And I saw during the game, actually, like a picture after Megan went to line up for that corner kick. And I'm like, is this like a manufactured photo? I'm like, what is happening here? Because honestly, there's no one else you can see in the photo. It's Megan about to line up. And the way that the angle is, all you see is the assistant referee. And then everything else is completely empty, right? And I think that alone has to be expressed too on how difficult this is for these teams and playing in front of these empty stadiums as well, especially a U.S. team. But when you're not doing that, yes, after not scoring many goals, which the U.S. is so accustomed to doing, to get off on the front foot against Australia, knowing that they have the ability to score goals. We saw that in this game. Awesome. And to score it like Megan did, Olympico, as you mentioned, is massive, right? It's massive in terms of alleviating pressure and also just like igniting that joy that we've all been talking about that seems, or the cohesion that seems to have been missing. So, yeah.
And alleviating that pressure also coming from the Matildas. We mentioned the start of this game and it was fast paced. It was high intensity. There was pressing all over the field, and the Matildas, they were putting a lot of pressure on the United States. It was pretty even, I want to say, for the first 5 minutes of just teams figuring out where their opponents were, the matchups on the field going against their opponents that they were battled up with 1v1. And to get this goal within the first 10 minutes on a set piece opportunity does change the game, because it was a set piece opportunity. And those were corner kicks and set pieces that the United States haven't been drawing in their attacking third throughout this Olympic Games. They were getting into their attacking end, but not getting the ball over the end line to draw those corner kicks and get those opportunities. And when you're creating so many chances in a high intensity moment like that, every player on the field, as soon as that ball went in, they were like, yes, but they were like, wait, this, it just happened so quickly because the game was moving at such a fast pace. And then bam, back of the net, their facial expressions were amazing. It was like, what? Yes. It was hilarious to watch them change on the camera.
Yeah, no, we talked about that a little bit. I mean, Lori specifically, you were like, we need to see the joy. We need to see the passion. And I think to have that type of goal kind of kick things off and set things in motion, it really does sort of, again, set the table for things for sure. But it was this first half in particular was incredibly, incredibly quick, fast paced, back and forth type of tempo. I mean, we're talking about Australia getting an equalizer just, you know, maybe like 10 minutes later. I believe this goal happened in the 8th minute, and then Australia's equalizer happened in the 16th. So it was like end to end, really. And we were talking about her all last episode as well. Sam Kerr comes up with this equalizer, and let's talk about how this comes to light. This is not to take away against Sam Kerr and her ability on the ball. We know how lethal she is. We've seen her scoring goals, quite frankly, all over the world in different leagues, and doing it for Australia on the big stage in a big moment like this. Lisa, defensively, let's talk a little bit about how this equalizer came to life. Bit of a poor decision from Davidson. You got to call that out and see it like you see it. But honestly, also maybe a question of how savable a shot like this is for a goalkeeper once it does get past, you know, your defenders. Your goalkeeper is essentially the last line of defense, right? So you're looking at those sort of things, and those are questions that we raise up. But what did you kind of see on this breakdown or miscommunication and on this equalizer?
Yeah, this equalizer did come from a mistake, and actually the next goal did as well. There was a few mistakes happening defensively all over the pitch, but this one was just bad passing and bad angles between the center back duo of Tierna Davidson and Becky Sauerbrunn. It was the mistake from Davidson trying to pass it over to Sauerbrunn and not realizing that she had high pressure from Australia waiting right there to jump on this. And then as soon as Australia does pick up the ball and they start to move quickly, they didn't have too much yards to cover, too many yards to go before they were right in front of the goal mouth. And I believe AD French gets a hand on this as it goes towards the net. She does try to save it, but it's a mistake on both ends, the defensive end and even the goalkeeping end. I think French was a little caught off guard at how it came to her because her team did have the ball that Tierna and Becky Sauerbrunn were looking to pass and play out of the back, not expecting this quick transition. But hey, that's what Australia does when they pick up the ball. And none other than Sam Kerr, who's able to get this finish, which is exactly what she does. It was really a brilliant finish from Sam Kerr on a really nice through ball from her. But the fact that French did get a touch on it makes me think that she could have gotten more. I think she was off balance on the save as it came in. But the mistake, that can't happen, especially what 10 minutes after the United States goes up. That's when this United States team needs to be so tuned in and so turned on to the game at hand and what's happening and looking to keep building on that momentum, not allow another team to switch and change the gears of the game at that point. Again, like, congrats to Sam Kerr, because it was a really well finished shot, and they stayed in this game throughout the entire 90 minutes. Australia never backed down.
Yeah. I mean, Lori, United States though, this first half, ridiculous. They came right back.
Yeah.
4 minutes later.
Yeah.
And Megan Rapinoe having a game.
Yeah.
Up until this point, immediately gets the team the go ahead goal in the 20th minute. You're talking just 4 minutes after Australia gets this equalizer from Sam Kerr. And this you don't imagine that you can connect on goal somehow better than an Olympico. But here comes Megan Rapinoe with a clinical finish and just slots this ball away in the 20th minute to give the United States a lead once again. What's your breakdown on that goal?
She lives for these moments, let's be honest. Listen, I've known Meg for a long time. We've been close friends for the same amount of time that we've known each other. And like, listen, the joke used to be that Megan was like checked out during training. This is early in her career, right? She's developed as a professional quite a bit. Yeah, she's a gamer, right? This is what she lives for. She lives for the limelight. She lives for these moments, and she's going to find ways to carry this team when needed. And that was this game. And she came up huge. And same with Carly Lloyd. I think the biggest eye opener for me is when Carly Lloyd scored her first goal too, is that was her first goal of this tournament. How outrageous that is for somebody who just set the record, I think, for most goals in a tournament for the U.S. So it is, I think that just puts a little bit in perspective on like the wild ride this tournament has been. But, you know, just side note, going back to what Lisa was saying, that is a savable goal. AD French would know that the number one rule as a goalkeeper, you don't get beat near post. She got beat near post, right? Regardless of how quickly it comes. And Tierna Davidson, clean up what you're doing back there, because she's world-class and there's a few mistakes that are being made. But with those two players in particular, not a ton of minutes in this type of environment. It really needed. And I say that because they are going to be, barring any sort of like anything that I don't know with AD French or injuries or whatever, they have a real potential to start to make have a lot of minutes with this team, right? And they're going to lead this U.S. women's national team going forward. So really important minutes and experience. And at the same time, I say that because the other two at the other end with Carly and Megan, you have that buffer to know, hey, listen, yeah, we made these mistakes. Here we go, though. We're going to come up huge. Get the equalizer immediately after they, or get the go-ahead goal immediately after Sam Kerr and Australia have scored the equalizer, and then Carly Lloyd as well, putting two away. So you have that buffer, right? And that's what it's all about, is having each other's backs and being able to know that if you do make mistakes, hell yeah, we got you on the other end.
Yeah, and the two mistakes from Davidson and French were mental completely. Like you said, world-class players that didn't have enough experience. So those mental lapses, that's, I mean, yeah, but if you can lean on players like Megan Rapinoe and Carly Lloyd, and I know we talked about this in our starting lineups, that it was not exactly what we were expecting to see or hoping to see, but you have to give it to them. These are players that know how to show up in big moments, and that's exactly what they did today. I thought of that after Rapinoe scored that second goal, I was like, everyone has been doubting her and saying, why is she getting the start? And she's older, veteran player. Why is she on this team? She doesn't look as good as she has in years past, which I'm not denying that. She obviously has aged a little bit. But
Nona has been at their best return, okay?
But she gets two goals. Like,
players, you know, hey, turning it on, turning it off.
Yeah.
A good balance there, I guess, in terms of this first half for sure. And congrats to Carly Lloyd. She did get that goal to close out the first half, a big goal in a number of ways. I mean, again, we were talking about how this game was so back and forth, very, very open in this first half. And then it's a much different feeling if you're Australia, right, heading into halftime. In a very open match, down 2-1 versus being down 3-1 going into halftime. So Carly Lloyd coming through huge with that sort of first half ending goal, making a bit of history. She beat Abby Wambach out for the top United States women's national team goal scorer in the Olympics with her 10th goal. So it's a hell of a statement to sort of close out your first half there. And you got to be feeling good, right? I think going into the halftime break in a bronze medal match up 3-1 with, 45 to go and playing, as well as you are, even with maybe the very early kind of mental lapse on the defensive side of things. It's an opportunity to maybe, hit the brakes and acknowledge that for a second. And we're going to hit the brakes and acknowledge our hydration break for a second. We've been doing it all Olympics, caffeine checks, checking in with each other. Let's hydrate. Cheers. And we'll talk about this second half.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's get into the second half. Believe it or not, there were more goals to be had in this match. If you're just joining us, just waking up, let's walk you through it. Let's get into all of these remaining goals. No immediate substitutions, right, in this second half. Not something that's been uncommon for this team. We have seen head coach Flacco Andonovsky make a number of rotations, make a number of substitutions throughout the entire Olympics. But nothing, I think, in this match up until this point maybe signaled like, hey, we should absolutely be making immediate halftime substitutions. And of course, it paid off once again, because we got 5 minutes into this second half. You're talking about Carly Lloyd also saying, hey, it's not just Megan Rapinoe who's going to be walking away with a brace on this day. I'm going to get involved here too. And she extends the lead some more for the United States and makes it 4-1 for Team USA in the 50th minute. Lori, again, we're talking about what these type of goals do for a team and their mentality in big games like this. What is a moment like that starting off the second half already with the lead, extending it even more, do for the team? Does it help you settle in a little bit more, or does it still like kind of get you amped up and make you want to go after things?
Yeah, I think both. I think one, it does amp you up. I think we saw the jubilation on Carly's face and what that meant to her personally, right? And then also, because I mean, she's about scoring goals. She knows if she's scoring goals, regardless of what the rest of the 90 minutes or however long she's playing, she is doing her job up there and putting teams under pressure. And also, I think... yes, it does give you a little breathing room, because as I'm sure we'll get into in a second, there will be more goals from Australia. So, and I also think in this tournament and potentially going forward, regardless of how good we are defensively, listen, like this is an Australian team who, you know, years past, I think for a lot of teams, it would be like, all right, 4-1 deficit against the US is like, there's no way we can come back. Right. But as we saw in this game, it was a lot tighter as this game went on than I think anybody wanted. But the reality is teams are getting better and they're becoming and they're finding ways, and we're seeing even more prolific goal scorers come about. And so, yes, it does give you some breathing room, but also it is like, hell yeah, because it gives us a buffer in case what we see happens and close calls or actually goals being scored. It's difficult when you have that many goals ahead for teams to actually come back, even though it was close.
Lisa, Australia gets another goal just 3 minutes later. You're talking about the United States, again, coming off on the front foot, getting a goal in the opening 5 minutes of the second half. And like Lori said, it's doing a couple different things for the team. But Australia comes back just 3 minutes later. And I mean, a good goal, like another goal where it exposes some things defensively. You got Caitlin Ford connecting on a header, and it's making things a little interesting for the second half as she cuts into the lead for Australia and makes it 4-2. What's going on this goal defensively?
Well, a lot of times when teams go up, like Lori just mentioned, you go up, you're down three as an Australian side against this United States team. You can get deflated, but honestly, it fired up the Matildas. They were whipping crosses in. They were getting chances in the box. They were putting the United States defense under a lot of pressure that they were handling okay. But as soon as this cross came in and you saw Caitlin Ford, she actually had to reach back for this one. The ball came in behind her, which makes this header and this goal even that much more remarkable to see. Immediately, Australia just attacking the United States and not giving up and not letting down. This goal was really big for Australia because now they just essentially put them ahead one more. So now it's only two down behind the United States. And after this second goal happened, I believe it was like the 54th minute, Sandra, maybe 55th. You're a good stat woman over there with the minutes. But after this happened, Australia almost had another one. They had Sam Kerr with a really good, really good opportunity off the post. I don't even know how that didn't go in.
That was one of my favorite opportunities of this tournament, actually. Yep. That ball from Rosso was
on a dime.
Whipped in. I was like, that's amazing.
I don't understand how that didn't go in. And AD French is thanking that post right there because it could have. It was literally millimeters away from going in because it bounced off the one post and went across the mouth of the goal all the way to the other post before being cleared out by the United States. And the look on Sam Kerr's face after that was like, How
You're
did that not
me.
Go in?
Yeah.
And
I think, she knew that too. That was the difference maker, right? Because like if that goes in, then that changes the course of the game in terms of swinging momentum consistently. Australia being able to put more pressure. And just again, like what we've been talking about is like the belief, right, against these teams. Like that is the biggest challenge for the US now, is like teams aren't fearing them in terms of mentality and like fitness, and these teams can attack too. So there's some differences here in terms of belief with a lot of these teams now.
I'm almost curious too if that goal for Kerr, if that opportunity for goal does for Kerr does translate into a goal. Like just 2 minutes after that Ford goal, like you're talking about two quick goals back to back right after the United States extend their lead to 4. And you're talking about a 4-3 game potentially at that moment, and what that looks like and what that means, and what that maybe presents to the coaching staff really for, mm-hmm. for the United States. Because even though it didn't go in and this match was still 4-2 at this point, we did start to see some adjustments being made for both sides of the ball right around the hour mark. So while the Matildas were making their substitutions, you had Roosevelt come into the game, Tobin Heath come into the game right at the hour mark. So I'm a little curious about, you know, how much of it was planned versus how much of it was momentum and the mm-hmm. tempo of the game at this mm-hmm. point, because they're coming on for Sam Mewis, and they're coming on for Megan Rapinoe again, who at this point is having herself a game in this match. So I'm a little curious, you know, about that type of stuff. But this, even though that opportunity doesn't cross the line for the Matildas, it still remained a pretty active game. I think mm-hmm. at points of this second half, it sort of felt like either one of these teams could get another goal. And obviously, if it would have been the United States, it would have been a little bit of cementing some things. But if you're Australia, if you do get that third goal, it can change up everything. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Looking ahead deeper into maybe the final 15 of this match, you've got a 4-2 lead at the moment. Things are feeling pretty good. I think if you have a 2-goal lead in the final 15 minutes, right? Even if it is a pretty open and wild game, maybe you're going to shift things around and try to lock things down defensively and try to organize things. And we started to see some tactical changes mm-hmm. there towards the end, right? We started to see the five back from the United States in an effort to sort of close things out. But in true bronze medal Olympic fashion, that doesn't happen. We were talking in the 89th minute, Australia gets a goal, and all of a sudden it's 4-3 in this match. And you're saying, oh no. Oh no.
Yeah. Close out a game, United States.
Actually, I think I messaged you all about like what time we're coming on to this. And then I was like, actually, I shouldn't have hit send, because like we're like 5 minutes away and like who the hell knows what's going to happen. So like who even knows if this is going into overtime or what? So delete that message.
That's what did it. We're going to put it on.
Yeah.
Lori provided the catalyst for chaos. It was delicious. 89th minute. The officials signaled that there's going to be 4 minutes of stoppage time. That's a lot of time in a game like this. And then on top of that, unfortunately, we saw Alex Morgan come off of the pitch with an injury. And this, on top of the 4 minutes of stoppage time, the official takes note of additional injury time. So it's a very frantic sort of closing final minutes of this game. But the United States hang on and are able to walk away on this day as bronze medal victors. And I think for now, for this first part of this next segment of what does this all mean, right? As we're sort of taking a look at the Olympics as a whole for now, in terms of the silver linings, let's say, in terms of the positive aspects, Lori, walking out of this tournament with a bronze medal for this team, considering how they started, what does that mean for this team?
Oh, it's massive. I mean, I think, listen, like anytime you can medal in an Olympics, these tournaments aren't easy. I mean, it seems like they're smooth sailing a lot of times, I think, because we've been so dominant. The U.S. has been so dominant in every single tournament, really, right? I mean, the amount of medals this team has won will never be matched. And it's quite remarkable. However, as we're seeing, competition is growing. It's the parity is tightening. And so it's just, which is amazing for the sport. Mm-hmm. But for this team, for the way that as fans, as people who love this sport, as people who have been close to the team, whether we played on the team or not, it is to get a bronze medal is massive, especially with the way that this tournament has gone. I mean, as we're all saying, thank goodness this term is over. Yes, we have a gold medal match, but goodness gracious, get us out of here because it has been a wild ride. And quite frankly, we're all tired. And so are the players. But listen, we know it hasn't been the best soccer for the U.S. So to come out, turn around after playing a semifinal, you don't want to go home without anything less than a gold, but then have to play for a bronze medal. That is not easy. That might sound ridiculous, but it is not. It is tough to turn the switch, to have to like get yourself pumped back up after a team that you've already played against. So massive credit to this team to come out. And I have some additional thoughts, but I'll leave that for the next part of this
Lisa
talk.
Was this game everything you had hoped for, and do you believe,
what a lofty question, Sandra.
Do you believe that you know, even though this wasn't the gold medal game that they had their sights on, is this something that the team can sort of look back and hang their head on? Because I mean, let's be frank, I mean, when we're comparing teams, you know, there's a certain level of expectation for this type of team. And in 2016, the headlines were that they fell short. I mean, it was epic. It was huge. It was something that had never happened. They walked away from the 2016 Rio Games without a medal. And here they are in the Tokyo Games. And again, they had set their sights on a gold, but they're walking away with a bronze medal from a tournament that was not easy for them. And they can look back and say, you know, we achieved something that we were unable to achieve in the Rio Games.
Okay, Sandra, you are finding the silver linings, and I really appreciate that. I really do. And this game was better than anything we had seen throughout this Olympic tournament. And over the last six games, this was the United States' best one. However, it's still not the team that this team has traditionally been. Against Australia and in this matchup, they were passing sharper. They were playing a lot quicker, 1-2 touches only on the ball, and immediately getting the ball out from under their feet, finding their passes, whipping them in. It was cleaner play all over the pitch, especially on the defensive side and the high press from the forwards. That was the high energy and the high intensity showed more of the joy that we hadn't seen from this United States team throughout this Olympic stretch. And it's really hard to judge for me if this was a good game for them, because honestly, it wasn't the best game from them that I've seen. But when you compare it to the way they've played previously over the last 2 weeks, yes, it was much better compared to Rio. When you look at the grand scheme of things, yes, they're leaving with a medal and a bronze medal. And although the competition across the world and internationally is getting better, which is tremendous for the leagues and for the sport overall, that's huge. But the United States is still a very good team. There's so much talent in this country that they need to really be building on and continue to grow. And the fact that they've been at the top for so long, I wasn't sure that they realized how close behind their opponents were, right on their backs leading into this Olympic tournament. So we saw better things against Australia. We saw much better things, a cleaner game, a more concise game, a more high energy game from this United States team. But there is so much going forward that I'm sure we'll talk about, because I want to hear Lori's thoughts on this. But things are different. The fan base cannot expect certain things anymore from this team, and they can't expect themselves to just waltz out onto the field and do it, which I don't think they did that by any means heading into this, but it's still a harsher look at this team and this game and this Olympic tournament. But yes, they are leaving with a medal, a bronze one, but hey, it's a medal.
Let's stay on this comparison for just a quick second, because, you know, for people who are coming into this Olympics for the first time, because that happens in international tournaments. International tournaments mm-hmm. generate a lot of buzz, a lot of interest, and a lot of people make their introduction into supporting certain teams within big moments like this. So for people who are unfamiliar with when that 2016 elimination happened, it was huge. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely dominating the headlines. And I will remind us and anyone else who needs it, but I remember a lot of some of the conversation exiting that Olympics was similar to some of the things that we were seeing within this Olympics as it was still going on. I mean, I remember even in 2016 where people were telling Megan Rapinoe that she was old and didn't need to be there. You know, I mean, this is 4 years ago. You know what I mean? So there's still this narrative that's there. You know, they were telling Carly Lloyd the same thing. They were saying Heather O'Reilly was named as an alternate for that roster in light of some of the conversations that were being had about that, about the team and wanting to maybe start a quote unquote turnover and like looking ahead to the 2019 World Cup and stuff like that. So here we are. And a lot of that conversation was ongoing during this tournament. It wasn't even, people weren't even waiting for this Olympics to be over. Quite mm-hmm. frankly, it was happening right when they suffered that 3-0 loss against Sweden in that opening Olympic group match. So in terms of staying in this sort of time frame and these similar narratives, I mean, we're here in the Tokyo Games. Lori, is this still the same perspective that people should be having? Is it normal? Does it make sense to maybe take a look at these last two Olympics, not just this one, and then say, mm-hmm. yeah, there maybe needs to be some different looks as this tournament comes to a close, and then a coaching staff looks ahead to the 2023 World Cup?
Well, listen, everyone's going to talk, right? The bigger this game gets, especially on the women's side, the more people are going to chime in, especially every 4 years, and have their opinion. This person needs to go. And regardless if you played at this level or not, and you just think you have the better perspective than anybody, just that's amazing, right? Oh, you know. Okay, great. Let's listen to you. Yeah. And obviously you being universally you, not you two or anybody that we actually value their opinion, however, great. Yeah. That's what you want. And like, you know, what's hilarious is that in 2016, then we saw what the team did in 2019, Megan in particular, becoming FIFA World Player of the Year from her basically carrying that team. So, you know, and people, I think, forget that Megan had come right off of an ACL injury in 2016. And then fast forwarding to here. Yes. I mean, listen, these conversations are always going to, if the team that you care about isn't playing or performing to the level that you feel like they are, then yes, you're going to start pointing fingers. I think what's important though, is this isn't just, yes, we can start naming off everyone's ages and we all know, right? We all know that, yes, there needs to be some turnover. Listen, it's like, the cycles are going to start to probably shrink more and more because the level of competition is becoming that much tighter, and to play at this level for the amount of years that we've seen is more and more challenging because it's just athletically, it is, it's going to become tighter and tighter, right? And the more games you see at the club level, it's just a more wear and tear on the bodies. However, I think it's important to remember that Carly Lloyd and Megan Rapinoe in particular, that a lot of fingers are being pointed at as like, older players, they didn't even start the game against Sweden. Okay. So we're talking collectively as a unit, this has not been the best tournament as a whole for the US, right? Players that we expected, Sam Uys and Lindsey Horan, right? Crystal Dunn, that we expected to have some like bigger impacts, right? Didn't. Now, listen, we could break that down and I'm sure we will get into that even more on why that is. We're not just going to say, hey, you didn't perform well. I think tactically there's some things that are involved and why that didn't bring out the best attributes in players. However, this isn't like, this is a smaller roster and we were shell-shocked against the Sweden team. And quite honestly, clearly it was difficult for them to bounce back from that. Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think it's an important point that you make in bringing that up because I don't think that's, I'm not sure if that's discussed enough. Actually, it's because it's just true. I don't know what it is about the Olympics, but for some reason it is, it just looks, because we're the ones watching it at this point, not playing in it, but it just looks, and I'm sure for the players, feels like a much harder tournament than the World Cup. And we hear that a lot coming out of this. I don't know if it's just the fact that it's fewer teams that are able to compete. It's much more difficult to qualify for a tournament that has only 12 teams in it, going for three medals. And then just the very quick turnaround in between games, leading into knockout rounds with the same exact quick turnaround. It's just a very, very hard competition to compete in. So that being said, I would like both of you to weigh in on this. And Lisa, I'll have you go first. In light of all that, right? Because I know this is the fun stuff where we talk about, we try to break down like what comes next and this and that. But I think we got to maybe take a moment to maybe try to find these bright spots for either of you, because we also hear about this coming out of tournaments about breakout players and players who have like big games and big moments. Who is it on this United States women's national team in this competition that we can maybe look at and point at and say, okay, you had a strong showing in this type of tournament, or you got next. Who is that, or who could that possibly be for either of you? Lisa, I'll have you go first.
Yeah, that's a really good question, Sandra. No wonder we put you in the seat to ask the questions. Dang.
Well, listen, we're going to need you to answer this too, Sandra.
So all right. Yeah. We're turning this around on you.
That's
sure.
Fair.
So there were certain players that did stand out to me. I think Alyssa Nair had a very good tournament before her injury. She did have a very good tournament. She kept this United States team in games more so than if someone else was in there. And that's not to say anything about AD French, because she also had a big role to fill. But I think Alyssa Nair was a player that came into this tournament very prepared and very ready to put this team on her back and keep them in games, which she did. Another player that we actually didn't see against Australia, but I believe has a very bright future with this squad and this team from the glimpses that we saw, was Lynn Williams. When she came in and she could provide the pressure up top and the darting runs in behind. We talked about this a little bit. I believe it was just us three. I don't even think it was on air, but seeing her in that nine position, in that center striker forward position, could be really big for this team moving forward. And that's a tactical adjustment, Lori, that you touched on, that maybe needs to change for this team and this squad. And that goes to show that the coaching staff can't just continue to play the same tactical formational play that they did under Jill Ellis, and maybe things do need to change. And with a player like Carly Lloyd in there, no, you're not going to see Lynn Williams in that nine, because that's Carly Lloyd's bread and butter, and she won't be as dangerous if she's out on the wings. But for Lynn Williams, when she got her moments, we saw it, a goal and an assist from her in the game that she played. But she's a player that I think could do a lot for the future of this team in her mindset and her energy and her effort that she brings on both sides of the ball. She needs to be a little bit more clinical in certain things. And now I'm just nitpicking here, but those are my two players I think that really stood out to me throughout this tournament and looking forward, despite everything else that was happening. I'm really trying to find the diamonds in the roughs here in a sense of it. Lori, no, for
it's
you.
It's a tough question that I ask. I understand. But Lori, do you echo similar sentiments? Do you have anyone else that stood out for you?
Yeah, for sure. I do have a couple. You know, I think we're all in agreement here that it is a little bit difficult to say like, hey, here's a standout performance when there weren't that many, right, in this tournament. However, I think going back to what I said about Tierna Davidson, this is valuable minutes for her, right? And like, no, is she a young player? Absolutely not. And she's been on these rosters, right? But to get this amount of minutes to at this international level, I really believe she will be a starting center back for this team. And I would still like to see her in that number six role at some point in time as well. I've been saying that for close to a year now, and what that could look like as a different type of six than a Julie Ertz. However, I'm not sure we're going to see that right now, because she seems to be solidified in that center back spot. So I think regardless of, you know, the mistake today, I feel like she's resilient and is a bright future. Also, I don't think we can underestimate how important it is that these 22 players, the four were elevated to an actual 22 player roster, because Katarina Macario, the experience that she would be getting outside of the few minutes that she played in terms of how players are handling the adversity in this tournament, the preparation between each matches, to be able to look to these older players, regardless of stepping on the field that much, will be invaluable, because there's no doubt that she is a bright talent going forward, and she will be needed in years to come. So again, we didn't see her much on the field, but behind the scenes, I guarantee you she was soaking it up, and there will be moments that will stick with her.
Yeah, yeah, there's so much to learn when you're not on the field, like a player like that. Even watching in post-game media availability with these players and what they're saying and how they're responding to these games is so big for the mental and the maturity side of the game for her. That's a really good point, Lori.
Yeah, well, because Turner Davidson was also one of those players that, you know, was made available, you know, during some of the post or the pre-match day availabilities. And that's a tall task to be kind of be asked to be one of the faces. Yeah, you know, totally. Such a tough, you know, tough losses, and she handled it quite well. But I'm in agreement with both of you. I think on the offensive side, it's somebody like a Lynn Williams. On the defensive side, it's somebody like Tierna Davidson, who I think people are going to be looking at coming out of this particular tournament. And I don't think that should be overlooked for Macario and this experience. I mean, while she didn't get a ton of minutes out on the pitch, so for us to be able to say like, oh, she's someone we've got our eye on because of how she performed, I mean, the jury's currently still out just because of the limited time. But getting these particular players in these moments is huge. I mean, a huge part of getting this experience is so that when you are looking ahead to sort of the next phase of this cycle, you have got players who have been involved in was a real pressure cooker, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, we heard glimpses and bits and pieces about that throughout this tournament, the pressure of that. I mean, it can't be overlooked that, you know, this Olympics was an Olympics that was being played through an ongoing pandemic. We cannot negate that. We cannot ignore that. Many teams, players, however you're looking at whichever side of the ball, lost a year and then all of a sudden accelerated themselves to try to, you know, be ready for a tough tournament like this. So to have these younger players in the mix with this team specifically, even without getting start or extended minutes, in my opinion, can only benefit the team moving forward. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, you're looking at their performances and you're, you know, keeping tabs on what they're doing when they are getting that significant play. And for somebody like Macario, who's overseas at the moment, playing in France with Lyon, or somebody like Davidson, who's always getting regular starts in NWSL, or Lynn Williams, who's always getting regular starts in NWSL, we're seeing what they can do. Mm-hmm. And then having these experiences for them to sort of look back on and rely on will absolutely be helpful down the stretch. But in terms of outside of this current roster, looking outside of it, this 22 player squad, and then really what's going to be another kind of quick turnaround, because we got a World Cup coming up in 2023. And I think there's always this level of assumption that this is the time to kind of do a turnaround on the squad or take a deeper dive and look into your pool of players. And I think that there's a real assumption there that that's going to happen with this team. I myself am not 100% sold on that. I'm not, and again, I'm going to just lean back on all of the things that I already mentioned, because this team's, yes, they're going to have to prepare for a World Cup that's going to take place in 2023, but it's in like 18-ish months, not really 2 years, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, again, they're still preparing for this, another major tournament in what's an ongoing pandemic. That's another huge factor as well. Those things come into play. So I'm not too sure how much different this squad could potentially look. They'll be bigger because, you know, obviously the World Cup is going to have 23 players, and who knows if by the time 2023 comes around, if any rules will change towards that, maybe it'll be a little bit of a bigger squad, who knows. But in the meantime, what we do hear about is this constant competitive environment that takes place for the United States women's national team, that it is constantly a place where players are coming in to compete day in, day out, both be each other's own competition and each other's, you know, support system, really, and helping elevate each other's game. So as we're looking ahead a little bit, maybe let's take a look at the three different lines. Who would you like to maybe see get inside of some of these national team camps as the next 18 months sort of start playing themselves out? Who are you looking for on the defenders, on the midfielders, and on the forward line side of things for head coach Flacco and Donofsky to get in there and really get in the mix? Lori, I'll have you go first.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do make a really good point, is sometimes we think we're going to see these huge overhauls, right? And that's just not really the reality, because what happens is typically you just see some people like retire and or fall out of favor or whatever, and then some new players are folded in, right? And so, yes, while I think we'll see some players retire and some players be maybe kicking, screaming, going a little bit more than they off the team more than maybe they want to, I don't think it'll be this massive overhaul, right? But, you know, one particular player that comes into mind that I'll be curious to see, and this goes to a little bit of a broader thought process for myself and how this team evolves tactically, would be an Andy Sullivan. Because Andy Sullivan was in major favor, gets injured, right, tears her ACL a couple of years ago, and then is still really working her way back. And I think what's interesting is watching her in the NWSL, we're still not seeing quite the best that I think that we can see out of Andy Sullivan. And how that fits in, and very much in line with like a Katarina Macario, how do their styles of play fit in with this U.S. women's national team, or do they not, right, going forward? And I'll just say this, Andy Sullivan is one. I think we are going to see like a Sophia Smith. I'd be curious about Alana Cook coming back into the mix, right? Two players that were like the last cut from this team. How they're folded in, what that looks like going forward. Those are a few players that come into mind, but it's more so really for me less about who's coming in and how the team evolves, because I think as we saw and I'll make this quick, but as we saw today against Australia, yes, tactically we had some flexibility when it came defensively. Like, you know, we fell back into the five back, great, all of that, right? We saw against Australia at moments in the first game that they played in the last group play game where we didn't high press, right? So we have some flexibility on like what we're doing without the ball. But really where I want this team to evolve is what it looks like with the ball, because I don't think that's what we've seen, right? We were presented with some different challenges in this tournament of teams not sitting back. Whereas like, yes, when teams sit back in the low block, we can pounce on them, we can press, we see how we thrive, we can force teams to make mistakes, cough up the ball, and then we're in advantageous positions to like score goals, right? And we're not as when teams are sitting back, we're not as susceptible to being scored on because there's not as many numbers forward, right? So if there's errant passes or unforced errors, we can get it right back, right? We have numbers around the ball. What happens when we've seen basically almost every single team outside of Canada, when teams actually press us or not afraid to build out of the back, right? And they're in much more expansive shape, which forces us to be in a more expansive shape, and we can't keep the ball. we can't get Carly Lloyd higher, or excuse me, Crystal Dunn higher up the field, right? We can't get her in the position where she wants to be. Lindsey Horan doesn't have enough players around her. Julie Ertz doesn't have enough players around her. Sam Uys doesn't have enough players around her. It's disorganized. So who's going to be the one that can put the foot on the ball and we can keep possession and dictate tempo and force other teams to do things that we want to because we have the ball and we can slow the tempo down when needed, speed it up, right? Because right now, personally, I feel like, this is my last point, is we have like one tempo, which is fucking go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we see that a lot in the NWSL, and I'm not knocking that. It's just like, really, the idea, though, is to go. And what happens if that's not on? Or teams can match us and they can win the ball back, and then we're, again, in expansive shape and can't get pressure, adequate pressure on the ball, and we can't win it back right away. So then once we do, we need to keep it. And those will be the nuances, I feel like, that have to evolve within our team, because we're going to be presented with a lot of different looks now that teams can match us in different areas going forward at the international.
Those are all really valid points to bring up. And of course, like, I'm asking these questions to you guys under the assumption that it's going to be, you know, Vlatko and Donoski for the remainder of the week. So I think we're all kind of collectively in agreement where it's like, he's going to be given the opportunity. He's made the podium with this team in a bronze medal. He's going to get the chance to lead them in a World Cup as well. So for you, Lisa, taking all that into consideration, maybe building off of what Lori added with some of the tactics coming into mind, who would you like to maybe see across any of the lines in any upcoming future national team camps for this team?
I agree that Andy Sullivan is a player that, if she gets consistent minutes at this international level with this national team, that her game could develop a bit more. But you're right, Lori, she has a certain tactic about her that may not fit with this squad. But I think that we've seen glimpses of Sullivan in the NWSL with the Washington Spirit, where she's been really on and she's been the dominant force in a game, that the player out of 22 that stands out in the match to be the one making the change and controlling the tempo of a game. So if she can get minutes with this national team squad, I think it would be good for her. And some other players that are standing out, Sophia Smith, she was right on the bubble of this one, of this national team. And she didn't make the cut, and she went back to Portland Thorns and decided that she was going to go off a little bit, and she's been scoring goals. So I think she could provide a good, different look in the attack for the United States. And then I do think Alana Cook will see more minutes and see more opportunities with this team, just based on how much she already has done at the international level and with this national team. And then based on the rotations we saw throughout this Olympics in the back line with the defenders, we saw Abby Dalkemper in some games and then not. And she really, I think she lost a bit of her spot in this Olympics tournaments to a player like Tierna Davidson. So now Vlatko Andonovski or whoever else is at the helm, but I think it will be Andonovski, it has to look at a player like Alana Cook. And we even had Casey Krueger, who was named to the 22 roster, who made it onto the bench and for this Olympic that could see time. But I do think Alana Cook, Sophia Smith, and Andy Sullivan are players that could be coming up the flanks. And I mean, there's another player, Emily Fox, who I really like from Racing Louisville that I've been keeping an eye on. But I don't know if she'll be there quite yet, as there are other players that have had more of a taste at the international level than she has.
And Sandra, Chicago Red Stars, Mal Pugh, she's been looking good.
Yeah, yeah, she is. I mean, I think if I'm looking across the lines, Mal Pugh is someone I actually want to see definitely get back into the mix for these national team camps. You know, Mitch Purse, we talked a lot about her in our preview and as the roster was dropped and what she can provide. And it'd be nice to, I think, get her in there, maybe get her more as an attacking look versus splitting time kind of on the front line and the back line. So we'll see what Andonovski has in the plans there. And, you know, defensively, I think there's always opportunities there. I think, yeah, Emily Fox is someone who needs to start getting some time in with these national team camps to really kind of start getting more familiarized with this team and the systems that are coming into place. And center back depth is always a good thing to have. So I would love to see somebody like a Katie Naughton called into some of these camps and to get a look at. And to be quite frank, I'd love to see Morgan Gautreaux back in these national team camps. I think she's been having an MVP type of season for the Red Stars in the midfield. And I think we saw a lot of trouble in the midfield during these Olympics. And a lot of things have been looked at in terms of experience and veteran leadership within those roles. And this is a player who is still probably considered in the peak of her career. Mm-hmm. And I think probably could have made a difference in the midfield for these Olympics. So I think if you're looking ahead to the World Cup, I think you're inviting her back into these national team camps to get another look at the midfielders in the mix in this one.
One more player I want to call out, just because as we're doing this, we've already gone long. So why not? Christy Mewis. She didn't get a lot of minutes. She was at this Olympic Games, though. And I think giving her more time and more consistency would provide a really good look for this team.
Yeah, I think with a bigger roster at their disposal for the World Cup, I think you know, shoot for the stars, right? get as many looks as you can, and you know, I think that's what we're gonna have to close out with. United States, they made the podium, they brought it in this bronze medal match. They're coming home with a medal. They have already improved on that 2016 to put it behind it. People can put that to bed and say, hey, they're getting back to get medals at the Olympic Games. And now it's going to be on to the next phase. I mean, this is not a team that's unfamiliar with, look like jumping right ahead into the next challenge. So I will not be surprised once sort of this NWSL season and sort of post-Olympic international friendly sort of kind of come to a close, what the next phase of some of these camps start looking like. So I just want to thank everyone for joining us during these Olympics. There is still a gold medal match to be played with Canada and Sweden. That has very recently been postponed, so that will now be kicking off at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on August the 6th. It will not be playing at night on August 5th. It was all very, very quickly, the news dropping as we were actually recording this. So if you're still looking forward to a gold medal match and have been on a sleep pattern where you're waking up very early, you get one more to take a look at. So find out who's going to end up with that gold and silver medal if you get a chance. This is going to conclude our Olympic coverage for everyone on Attacking Third. But we're going to still be around giving everybody great coverage of NWSL and other amazing women's soccer happening stateside and otherwise. Lori, thank you so much for joining us. Everyone else, thank you so much for joining us and listening to us. A quick reminder to follow us on Twitter at Attacking Third. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere you listen to your shows. We're also available as video, so please subscribe to us on YouTube. Just visit youtube.com/attackingthird, and we will be back on Monday with another episode to recap NWSL action. For Sandra Herrera, Lisa Roman, and Lori Lindsay, this was Attacking Third.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does. 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.